Chapter 6, Cats and Dogs. Although this chapter deals with issues that do not affect every squadron, it does address many issues that do. Some of the issues are pleasant ones, others are not so pleasant. Honorary Squadron Commander Programs. Many squadrons have a program in which a prominent member of the local community, often a member of the local government military affairs committee, volunteers and agrees to be your honorary squadron commander. If you're fortunate enough to have one, you're lucky. If your wing does not have such a program, suggest one. If tackled properly, it can be a rewarding experience for both of you. Our wing had a very special relationship with the surrounding civilian community, said Lieutenant Colonel Terry Kono, and as such, we had a very strong honorary squadron commander program. Although my honorary had a very busy schedule, we made a point of meeting for lunch or talking on the phone or attending wing functions from time to time. I think he was a superb voice to the civilian community about the Air Force mission in general because he knew the squadron so well. It is probable that your honorary squadron commander will have a specific interest in the professional activities of your squadron, likely because the individual's local employment will closely mirror your unit's mission. For example, the local bank president often will be paired up with the commander of the comptroller squadron. The manager of the local petroleum company might be paired up with the supply squadron commander. Or the community police chief will be the honorary for the security forces squadron. This common association can be of great benefit to you and your squadron, both personally and professionally. The role the honorary plays is completely up to you and the individual, who can and will be as active in your squadron as you both choose. Common events the honorary should be invited to include all squadron common parties, such as your unit's summer picnic and winter holiday party. If the honorary has small children, extend an invitation to your squadron's children's spring party or May Day get-together. And don't forget the change of command ceremony. The honorary should be on the secretary's list of distinguished visitors. In most wings, the director of staff handles this program in conjunction with the protocol office. Closing down a squadron. You may be the unfortunate commander who will be your squadron's last one due to an impending closure of your unit. With today's efforts to slim down force structure and realign some Air Force wings and squadrons, it's possible that you'll get caught up in the change, and it might come as a big surprise. The news came as a bolt out of the blue, said Lieutenant Colonel Matthew Black. I was already behind the power curve because the announced date of closure was almost immediate. It caused great alarm for the personnel in my squadron. Everyone wanted to know where they were going to be assigned, when they had to move, etc. It caught me quite by surprise. Personnel issues likely will occupy the vast majority of your time. Your major command and numbered Air Force, as appropriate, will offer some direction. The Air Force Personnel Center also will be heavily involved, and your attention to these major matters will need your complete oversight. Consider asking the AFPC assignment officers to come to your unit to brief your personnel en masse. Arrange for your wing's mission support squadron personnel to attend to help answer any related questions. Planning ahead and paying attention to detail will help avert trouble down the road. Lieutenant Colonel Al Hunt was in command of the 13th Airlift Squadron, C-141, at McGuire Air Force Base, New Jersey, when he was told his squadron was to be deactivated. He offers this advice. Although there's not a lot of stuff out there telling you how to close a squadron, don't reinvent the wheel. Find someone who's already had that experience and pick the person's brain. Call the United States Air Force Historical Society, located at Maxwell Air Force Base, Alabama, for advice and direction. They were a good source of information regarding the heraldry of my unit. This is a time for a commander to be a leader. If rumors are flying around, try to stop them. You can do so by having an out-of-cycle commander's call, for example, to address the unit's concerns. Arm yourself with as many facts as you can and talk to your troops directly, face-to-face. They will be thirsty for your leadership and frankness. Tell them not to panic and assure them that they won't get lost in the dust of the reorganization. Many of your unit personnel will get absorbed in other wing units, but some will undoubtedly have to move off station. Short-notice permanent change of station actions are inevitable in these situations and will have to be treated accordingly. Your days will be long. Lieutenant Colonel Wilfred Cassidy has faced this situation of retiring the squadron colors twice during his Air Force career. He said, "One of my greatest challenges was keeping the squadron's personnel motivated. I had to constantly remind them of how important they were to the wing's mission, and the fact that our squadron was closing did not mean that they were any less important. Once the formal actions are taken care of and are underway, now is the time to relax. Have a celebration. Find an energetic squadron member, or 10, and have them organize a going-away party for the entire squadron." Those commanders who have faced this situation all remarked that it was the exact thing to do at the end of such a tumultuous period. They held a huge party. They invited the wing staff. They invited all former squadron commanders and those former squadron members who still lived in the local area. Some designed t-shirts signifying the event and captured it on cotton. Others designed a shutdown coin for everyone. We even invited our MAGCOM functionals. We had it professionally videotaped as going-away souvenirs for the squadron personnel. Although no one wanted the 13th Airlift Squadron to close, we made the best of a bad situation. It was a class act, said Lieutenant Colonel Alan Hunt. Whatever you choose, make it big. Money management. There are two facets to money management. Funds associated with your annual budget, as provided by your wing through the comptroller, and those funds that fall within your squadron, in the form of snack bars, fundraisers, and so on. You undoubtedly will attend a MAGCOM pre-command course before your assumption of command. Here, you will learn the major rules of squadron finance and what you can and cannot legally or ethically spend money on. I won't attempt to tackle the fundamental issues here, but I do want to give you some good advice. Pay attention. Without question, the issue of money management can be your fastest ticket to trouble, serious trouble, if either pot of money is mismanaged. Spend considerable time studying this area. Money management at the squadron level is something you probably haven't had to worry about. Before, if you needed new toner for your printer, you may have asked to use the Squadron Air Force government-wide purchase card to buy it without regard for the checkbook balance. Need a new pair of boots? Just ask your mobility shop or resource advisor for a pair, with heretofore no regard for the financial bottom line. As commander, you are now responsible for every dime your squadron makes or spends. I spent our allotted funds as if they were my own money, said Colonel Kono. You always have a need for more money, so it's incredibly important to prioritize a limited budget. I know it sounds like micromanagement, but I wanted to be aware of every dime that was being spent. We had short-term management, 30, 60, 90-day looks. I kept an eye on the annual budget, but with an eye toward inflation rather than just the previous year's spend plan. A detailed priority list for the end-of-year spend-out, if money dropped from our MAGCOM, and a 5-year look-ahead to account for wear and tear on equipment. I made sure the squadron as a whole understood how we spent the money. I hope that you will have an NCO in your squadron who is designated as your Squadron Resource Advisor, RA. If not, get one. Assign the role as an additional duty and send the person to the necessary training. Some wings have a formal training session conducted by the wing's comptroller squadron, and others have a less formal training program through the group RA. It is your RA who is primarily responsible for the day-to-day activities of your checkbook. But never forget that it's your checkbook. If your resource advisor makes or allows an unethical, illegal purchase using government funds, you and you alone must bear the full responsibility for such actions. For example, although my squadron had a very large budget, and even given that I was fortunate to have a smart and experienced resource advisor, it was my policy to be informed of any purchase outside what we had already established as norms, over $1,500. If something didn't pass my common sense cross-check, I'd be sure to ask repeatedly if what we were about to purchase was legal and ethical. The word quickly got around that this was high on my list of priorities. The size of your squadron and unit budget will determine what your policy will be, but I strongly suggest that you get hold of your squadron purse strings as soon as possible and never, never let that checkbook get out of your sight or control. If you do, you will do so at your own peril. Lieutenant Colonel J. Carlson was not only concerned about the financial plan of his own squadron, but was concerned about the financial plans of every squadron and the wing due to his duties as the 18th Wing's contracting squadron commander. He offers this advice. It's critical for the squadron commander to fully grasp the responsibilities of having a viable spend plan listed in order of priority well before you approach the end of the fiscal year. You should also check with your group commander to determine what his or her priorities for your money are as well. It's not unusual for any unspent squadron dollars to roll into group and wing buckets. Essentially, if you don't spend it smartly, someone else will. Another area that was likely covered in your MAGCOM Commander's course is that of funds generated from your squadron's snack bars and fundraisers. Different animals entirely. There is an upper limit on how much money you can have in any one fund at any one time. And given the size of your unit, it is something that is potentially ripe with mismanagement. Abuse that can get you into trouble easily. Have a standard, announce it to all, and publish it on every squadron bulletin board. One thing is certain, squadron command can be personally expensive. Some commanders took it in stride by saying that squadron command was a once-in-a-lifetime event, and they knew to budget for the increased out-of-pocket expenses. Others aggressively worked with their unit's booster club to set policies for units' unfunded purchases. Who should pay for flowers in the event of a death in the family? You? The troops section? The squadron top three? Or the booster club? Some squadrons have a program that congratulates the parents of a newborn child with a care package that includes a month's worth of diapers, food, formula, and a stuffed toy. This is certainly a great idea for the young airman who can use the free baby goods, but who is going to pay for it? All these events need some thought before they happen. You'll hopefully have some thoughtful personnel who come up with great ideas to help others, which is a good boost for squadron morale, but it is your responsibility to follow up with the all-important and often overlooked details. Dorm inspections. Dorm inspections are an integral part of a commander's job, but you, the commander, can add impact to the routine. You'll likely have at least some members of your squadron living in the base's government dormitories. Get your first sergeant's feelings on the matter, but participate in dorm room inspections. How often you accompany the first sergeant or how many rooms you inspect at any one time will be entirely up to you. Dorm life can be a source of many disciplinary issues for your young airmen, so understanding how and where they live will give you a better insight into their lives. Consider these techniques. When you do participate in dorm room inspections, leave something in the room to let the airmen know you were personally there. Some commanders left troops a note of congratulations when things looked good, an attaboy note to say how proud you are of their attention to detail. 5 good inspections in a row earned them a 24-hour pass and public recognition, said one commander. Major J. Carroll put clean and organized rooms high on his list of priorities. I gave a 72-hour pass every month to the airman who had the most improved dorm room. What an instant success. One thing that energizes young people most is the reward of having time off. I went from a terrible dorm room problem to no problem at all. Another commander left troops a lollipop or other piece of candy on their desks to let them know he cared enough to personally inspect their rooms and enforce a common standard. Additionally, I arranged for several of my junior officers to follow my first sergeant and me on our rounds of the dorms. I thought it was important for their professional officer development and was another tool of experience in their toolbox to use when they get the opportunity to command. Conversely, if you witness a room that is clearly out of standards, let the troop know this as well, but not with a note. This needs to be handled face to face. Confer with your first sergeant to determine the best course of action. Let the airman know directly that living in a government housing facility is a privilege, not a right, and a privilege that can be taken away if the situation isn't corrected immediately. One commander handled it this way. After a failed inspection, he had the dorm room occupant and the individual supervisor meet him or the first sergeant at 0600 on the following Saturday morning for a full and complete re-inspection. Believe me, the situation will likely get resolved immediately and hopefully will not return. If you see an area in the dorms that you believe requires serious attention and serious money, such as the need for a new recreation room television, necessary upgrades to community kitchens, or renovations to public restrooms, consider inviting your group commander for an inspection or two. It may have been some time since he or she conducted dorm inspections. Taking this opportunity will give your airmen the attention they deserve. After all, the dorm is home to them, the place they go after 8 to 12 hours or more of hard work. With O6 attention comes O6 concern, and the group commander can vie for the necessary funding to purchase any needed furnishing upgrades. Most wings have a policy of keeping the dormitories filled to near 100% capacity. Until this magic number is exceeded with younger, newer airmen, those older airmen, and perhaps E4s as well, will not have the option of moving out. This naturally results in several unmarried residents being unhappy with mandatory dorm placement. Generally, the wing support group commander, acting in the capacity of the installation commander, while in some wings this responsibility falls under the wing commander, will have well-established and published policies regarding dorm facility management. Check with that office soon to find out what the exact policies are, because you will not be in command long before one of your airmen asks to get out of the dorm. Regardless of the specific policies at your base, many airmen will do what is called ghosting. This is where several airmen will get together, pool their money, and live out of an apartment or house downtown in the local community. Because they are required to live in the dormitory, the housing allowance is still taken from their paychecks because of their government housing status. In effect, they're living on their own and out of their pockets. You'll first notice this when you conduct a dorm room inspection to find virtually nothing in the room. I was alarmed when I first witnessed this, but soon came to realize that ghosting is not illegal and is often allowed by the squadron commander, as long as the airman's financial obligations off base are faithfully met. I allowed it and never had a problem. U.S. Government Travel Card. Here's another area that may prove painful for you and your first sergeant, and certainly one that definitely needs your personal attention. If not handled up front with a personal policy letter from you, it will crop up later when the government-issued credit card is inappropriately used. Enough commanders raise this issue during interviews to include it in this section. By regulation, every member of your unit will be issued a government credit card for use during professional travel and related services. Again, your MAGCOM Squadron Commander's course should cover the proper and legal uses of the card. Unfortunately, many command-sponsored courses don't offer advice on how to manage your program. Although your young airmen may be the worst offenders with the card, misuse is by no means limited to that target group. It is necessary to have a published letter from you that requires their personal signature, explaining in clear and unambiguous detail the appropriate uses of the credit card. Because this problem is not new, you may have inherited an acceptable policy from your predecessor. The vast majority of the problems come from unit personnel who get caught in a fiscal bind and end up using the government cards for personal use to get through this bad financial period. What many of them do not understand is that you, as the commander, or your personally designated credit card administrator, get a monthly financial statement from the credit card company listing every transaction on each card of your personnel, highlighting those offenders who have failed to pay off their accounts within a 30, 60, or 90-day period. A quick scan of the report can help you spot misuse. Use of the government credit card to pay off other personal debts is also common and can easily be spotted each month. A local transaction at Big Al's TV Repair should be a certain tip-off. Every commander interviewed for this book had a written policy in effect. Many of the commanders interviewed had unique ways of controlling the card's use and potential misuse. For example, one commander of a very large squadron was responsible for a sizable group of young airmen. She had a straightforward approach to preventing potential misuse. She confiscated all cards for E3s and below and handed them out, through the first sergeant, to those who were ordered to temporary duty. She commented that very few personnel were offended by this seemingly harsh approach, and many more were grateful to be relieved of the burden of having to carry it around. Obviously, this approach works best for a squadron that rarely deploys and can be an administrative nightmare to those who travel often.